Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome, everyone, to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. Today in our studio, we have Leslie Baxter. Leslie is a seasoned executive. She's been with Total for many years in various leadership roles, various countries, have worked with various cultures, encountered lots of diversity, and has been navigating herself and her teams around some really interesting challenges through the years, none the least through the pandemic and now emerging from it. Leslie, welcome to our podcast series. Thank you for making the time and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Sar. Thank you very much, first of all, for this invitation. It's really something I'm excited about. So who am I? Yeah, as you said, Leslie Baxter. I've worked with the Total Oil and Gas Group for 24 years, so probably more years than I care to remember. Mm. So, as you mentioned, I've been in many, many roles during that time. I started in the UK as a management accountant in gas and power trading and marketing. I then moved to the head office in France and was doing some M&A acquisition, investment appraisal type of things. I then came to South Africa, where I actually met you for the first time, and was in the coal mining business as the CFO there. I then had the great opportunity to go to China. Very, very different, very interesting experience. Again, within the group, but moving to the retail side of things. So probably the thing that Total is best known for, the service stations and the downstream part of things. After spending 2-3 years in China, I moved back to France again to the corporate office to take a little bit of a reset. And about 18 months ago, I came back to Africa, which I was very delighted to do, and joined the downstream marketing business in Nigeria. Finance is my background, but I think if you asked me today, I don't consider myself an accountant anymore. Really, I'm an individual who is there to help try and identify the means and possibilities to ensure that the business can make the right decisions at the right time, understand its environment, and adapt to this very, very fast change pace world that we find ourselves in now.
Hmm. So Leslie, if I had to take you a little bit back at the time that you were a management accountant and kind of carving out your path within a very large and complex group. If I had to ask you in those days when you were facing a new role and your organization you were thrust into, how did you go about? What was your thinking process of how do we make sense of this environment, both the kind of internal work environment as well as the external, the market environment? What was kind of the thinking process? I'm always curious about how we sense make, how we try to make order from a fairly complex environment. And you seem to have had the good fortune of having quite a few of those. So I'll take you a little bit to the start of this process. And then we'll take our way from there.
Sure. It was interesting. This role that I got in Total at the time, I was the first person in the finance department for that actual business activity. So beyond kind of arriving and trying to understand how that business worked, it was also about setting everything up from a zero base, because there wasn't a role that had existed previously. So really it was in at the deep end with the first task set by my boss to say, I want you to prepare some monthly reporting for me and my sales team, which will tell us who we are, what we're doing, how our business works. So a lot of it was then about being curious and asking lots of people, lots of questions about what type of information exists, how does the process work, and really kind of spending a lot of time listening to people, and taking all of those disparate pieces of information and trying to put the puzzle together, so to speak, to try and make sense out of that kind of, I won't say chaos, but overload of information in some instances. And does everything talk to each other? Where it doesn't, why that is the case, which piece of information you should trust more than another piece of information, and really kind of go back down. And I think this was a key lesson I learned throughout my career, is try to understand the fundamentals of whichever business you're going into, right down to the very bottom process. Because if you understand how it works on the ground, then you can build it up, and then you can make sense of the information that you've got. If you don't do that, you can rely on things that people have just assumed because the person before them told them that was the case, or five people ago, they decided that was the case. But sometimes when you look at it and you test it, it's maybe no longer the case. So you have to have that curiosity. You have to have that willingness to put yourself out there and ask questions, and then try to make sense of the information, sometimes contradictory, that you will receive.
Now, Leslie, now you're getting me curious, because I'm thinking of some of our earlier work. And one of the things that I'm thinking about is, you know, when you start off, you don't necessarily have positional power. You may not have the budget and the authority to just bring a team together and to sense make, what are we really facing here? Has the conditions changed? Sometimes people won't reveal to you what their assumptions are. You, the newbie on the block, you're the person who's trying to forge a relationship, collect information, test whether your view of the world might be different to theirs, and not always the reception is warm and welcome, right? So I kind of wonder, do you find it easier to be curious in an environment where you cannot rely on positional power, on the kind of mandate that comes with a head office role, et cetera, et cetera? Or is it later in your career, when you've had those tools in your at your disposal, that curiosity could then be leveraged? I'm just curious, because it is something that often we are easy to connect with earlier in life, and at some point many people, even in the work environment, they stop being curious, they stop questioning, they stop seeing even that the rules exist. So I'm just curious, from your perspective, has that changed?
I mean, yes, I think it's a very good question. It's not easy to be curious and have your questions answered. I think that's very true. Particularly, you know, I came in through the finance side of things, and whilst finance and ultimately, as I am now, you know, an executive director, secretary general, and have the big powerful position, I don't kid myself that in the scheme of things, if I'm talking to the sales and marketing team, I'm talking to the production team, the guys who have the budget, who have the resource, and the decisions they do have an immediate impact on how a business works. That position of power plays a part, but a lot of it really has to come down to how I find myself as an individual trying to relate to people in those teams, to build trust, to encourage an open dialogue. And it's about coming in and listening. I spend a lot of time listening, particularly when I move into new roles, even roles where ostensibly I know the business because I've done that business before, but I don't understand the context. And without understanding that context, and without showing the people that you're going to work with that you are willing to understand that context, you're not going to get information, even if you're the MD, because information that you get from data is one thing, you know, but we all hear the analogy, the computer says, but the computer says what it's fed at the end. It's the interpretation. It's the context to say this happened because, and that is really only attainable through that dialogue with the people who have been around at that point in time, or who are the ones in the midst of the activity that generates that data. So a lot of time, a lot of effort on interpersonal discussions, trying to listen, as I said before, to people's explanations without judgment, because it's, it can be as legitimate as not legitimate. We don't know. Trying sometimes delicately, sometimes to go beyond the statement which can say, well, it's like this because, and it's, they say that because it's they, what they have been told in the past, as I've said before, and it's kind of built up this kind of, well, this is how it happened.
Hmm.
Is the questioning side of things, where maybe you go and say, but what about this? And but if this happens, would it have this effect? And really trying again without placing blame or pointing fingers, or it's not about that at all. It's about having a better understanding. So you need to listen to people with a very open mind, to do so in such a way that it's about information gathering. It's not about judgment. It's not about saying it doesn't work well and it could work better, because we're not at that stage in our process when really we're trying to find out how things work. And it's amazing that sometimes by going through that process, I have found that at the end of it, even the staunchest defender of how something works and a reason for doing something will come to the conclusion that maybe it no longer works that way. Maybe it's worked like that 5 years ago or 2 years ago, but today it no longer is how we need it to be. And that's sometimes the trick, because the past, we can't make a judgment as to why a decision was necessarily made in the past.
Yes. But
particularly with COVID, I think in 2020, the environment has changed so quickly that more and more we find that these decisions have to be reviewed more quickly to keep pace with that environment. So, and I find businesses often get comfortable because they put a lot of effort into a process or implementation, design, and it's never looked at again for another 5 or 10 years. But around them, that external and internal environment has changed. And that process is no longer as effective as it originally was. People just haven't realized that because they haven't had someone come in and just ask sometimes the obvious questions.
Hmm. Now, I guess that even takes on another level of importance to listen openly, to not prejudge, and to try to understand, even as you said, the staunchest detractors, when they go through that thinking process, it is helpful to them, not just to you, in trying to understand perhaps for the first time or engaging with them for the first time. I guess if I had to throw one more layer at this, which is the national culture, when you're in a new country, when the way people make sense of the world, the way they were conditioned to make sense of things, whether it is business, whether it is commercial relationships, whether it's personal relationships, etc., are different. How does that change in any way the way you approach, you exercise curiosity? Are there things that you've learned having engaged with various cultures that are now useful as you try to navigate new and different terrains? Or do you have to start literally from scratch, being the avid learner, the super curious person, every time you hit a new situation?
That's a really good question. That cultural difference, I mean, when I first made the move from the UK to France, in my mind, it was, okay, I'm going to France to speak a different language, but it's 300 miles from London to Paris. And boy, was I surprised at just how different things were. And I'm not talking about language here. I'm just talking about things that you grow up with, just knowing innately because it's just there. And people don't even think about explaining that to you because it's kind of so ingrained into how things are done. And that was my first experience, and that was a real big culture shock. And it took time to understand. And fortunately, people in the Paris office are very used to expats arriving. They very much understand things are going to be different and there has to be that transition period. But it kind of jolts, I think, the expatriate out of maybe their comfort zone, because you're not only fighting the language barrier, but you're also fighting this kind of cultural sort of thing. So if anything, it made me more curious, because I wanted to kind of try to get behind that and understand. Because for what I could see is just even the terms of phrase that you use and how that was done, you are not necessarily going to hit the mark in the conversation or the discussion you're having. It was slightly less when I came to South Africa, but there's still a cultural difference between the UK and South Africa. But some of the lessons I had learned when I was in Paris really helped me, even just to prepare me to expect that cultural change. And that there has to be some effort, certainly on my side, because I'm the expatriate who comes into the country. There has to be effort on my side to understand those kind of unspoken norms and rules that exist. And I always try to find someone who is comfortable to explain that to me. And if you can have that, it does help. And that could be a colleague, it can be someone who you get to know outside the office. But it does help to have someone sort of say, maybe you shouldn't say these side of things, or maybe you can't really expect that to happen because it's just not the norm here.
Hmm.
Moved to China, wow. that was a big thing. And the China part of it, what really got me in China, because was a real need, and it really brought it home to me, and I carry this everywhere now, is the real need to look at body language.
Hmm.
Sometimes in China, we're talking, and it's people have got some fantastic English skills there, but many instances, you know, it's not their first language, and the business culture is still very, very much Chinese. It's not kind of European, it's not Anglo-Saxon or anything like this. And I really tried to, and I realized over my time there that focus on what people say and how their body reacts is a very important thing to be aware of, because it helps that interaction, because you can be saying something, but your body's not reflecting it. It was a real kind of signal for me that language is not just the verbal, but it's also the body.
Hmm. Leslie, I just want to go back for a moment to one thing that you have experienced in your time in South Africa, and that's, in addition to the cultural nuances, there was also a different business model. The coal business was essentially run as an outsourced operation in many respects. How did encountering different business models, different commercial relationships to what is often the norm in the industry, and certainly what you were used to, how did that add or detract from your approach to performance, to focusing people, to achieving something meaningful?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly opened up a whole new bunch of stakeholders that are critical to whatever you're trying to achieve. My experience to that point had been very much, it was very internal. You knew exactly who your stakeholder was, and you were all working for the same company with the same objective or with comparable objectives. So, and you had that, as you mentioned before, you had that kind of sort of lever, that interaction to pull upon. Coming to an outsource model, particularly I think in a mining environment where essentially you had a very small company function managing a very large, I think it was probably five or six times larger than the total company headcount, but managing very large kind of contracted staff through a contractual relationship, which doesn't define absolutely everything. So you really have to get into that whole kind of, well, what's the spirit behind this? Because the contract doesn't say, per se, it doesn't say explicitly in this example, this is what's going to happen. So I, again, what I tried to do was tackle it and sort of say, well, you have to have an ability to build a rapport. I have to ask these people with a similar goal, what is their business? How does it fit within ours? Where are the synergies? What works for them? What doesn't work for them? Because not every relationship is perfect. What are their stresses and what are their strengths? So again, I tried to have that open mind, that listening kind of perspective. I try in every role to come in the old adage, spend the first 100 days or so figuring out how things work and who's who and things like that. Just to sort of say, okay, I've taken stock and this is where I think listening to everyone, we maybe need to be focused upon in terms of ultimately the end objective for every company is to become, you know, more effective, profitable, sustainable in the long term. And if that's good for me as a contractor, surely that's got to be good for you. So it's to try and bring that cohesion of interests to the table and sort of say, together we are stronger than if we're separate. So let's see if we can work together. It works generally, but of course you always have between contractors and contractees, you will always have some form of tension. That's natural, you know? Right. So I'm not saying it whitewash the whole thing and everything's perfect in the garden, but we have to try at least to have a constructive relationship and understand those pressures because their survival is important to our survival and vice versa.
Yes. And I guess one of the things that I've noticed, it also, when you have that honest conversation, it starts to open up new options that may have not been there, you know, at the extreme. We own this lock, stock and barrel, or you own it and we manage it through a contractual relationship. There are quite a few opportunities to affect a different model that is a hybrid, that is different, that we looked at, and by design, it seemed superior to just throw it at one end and hope that the other party reciprocates. That certainly stood up for me at the time. Leslie, if I just take you back to a market as complex and as, I guess, enigmatic to many Western firms. Let's go back to China for a moment. So there you were dealing both with a different language and you spoke about the importance of nonverbal cues, certainly a challenging geography, and many industries in which the kind of the evolution of the industry did not follow the Western path. Many emerging markets as well. There is a leapfrog in terms of the use of technology. If I think of China in terms of banking and specifically payments, if I think of China in terms of adopting renewable energy, solar and wind in particular, it doesn't follow the same path that Western nations have followed. So if I had to ask you, having spent a few years in that environment and come out having experienced both the commercial side of the business, the contracting, as well as working with people in operations, what would you take out of the China experience back into the Western world and say, here's what I didn't know was so valuable, and I now know that. Here are the kind of things that I may have not been exposed to in Western business books, MBA programs, and even working with colleagues in the Western world, that now that I've experienced it differently in a Chinese context, there's a lot to learn from here. You know, a couple of months ago, in fact, I was speaking to a professor of strategy that is Dutch by origin, but has spent many years of his life in China and in fact has written a wonderful book about the kind of Chinese innovation, the type of models and the kind of speed at which they are willing to innovate at. And just those insights being brought back into a Western context was so interesting. I kind of just wonder, what are the kind of lessons from China that you can bring into the Western context? Or are there emerging markets for that reason?
Certainly. I mean, China is a behemoth, you know, just purely in terms of its geography, but I think also in terms of its potential. Where I was, we had some joint venture partnerships with the Chinese state companies, but we were also working with independent companies, et cetera, et cetera. So there's, I think, like any country, there's a huge diverse type of activity that you can get. You can get those type which are very much still hugely state owned, very almost kind of what you would say, kind of lumbering dinosaurs, kind of still got a long way to go. But on the other hand, you've got companies like Alibaba and the development also of financial markets that are sweeping the world and taking over a pace of things. And the speed in terms of digitalization, they've got some apps there which make things like Facebook and WhatsApp seem very, very clunky and unsophisticated. So clearly there's a huge, huge potential there. They've got a workforce that is highly educated. There's still a huge, huge focus on education. And competition is fierce. So there's high quality graduates who have a lot of curiosity about the future, about new technologies. And China has leveraged its position very, very well. It learns rapidly. It is now making its presence seen in Africa and in Asia and even into Europe. We can see development of 5G, et cetera, et cetera. And none of that surprises me, because there's an agility there. There's a willingness to invest and take risks in order to develop that new technology now. So China, maybe in the past, was seen to be, it will take and copy the technology of Western companies. It's past that now. It's the technology that they're developing there, the innovation that they're showing there is first rate. It is comparable to, and in many instances, better than what is being developed in the West. And then it's got that kind of huge reach, the huge internal market that you've got there, 1.6, 1.7 billion people. There's a huge amount of growth. There's still a large amount of the population who still have to be lifted completely out of poverty, and they've got some very aggressive targets to do that. And so they've been focused on those internal markets, but more and more they're looking and saying, well, we can compete with the old established US and European companies, and they're there and they're playing the game. What they bring to the table is they place a lot of importance upon relationships, especially when it comes to contracting. They spend time getting to know their partners, their customers. So a lot of it is the contract is kind of the framework that's there for reference, but really building that relationship and developing that and thinking about the future. So not just about today, but also about tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a lesson that a lot of companies can learn, that long-term partnership as opposed to that short-term customer relationship, I think is quite well developed in China. And we see now, even with, as I said, on the digital side, with some of the technologies that are coming through, there's Chinese partnerships in there. There's a lot of creativity. So I think that we will only ever see more of China. And I was very, very happy to go and spend 3 years there just to get those insights, because the quality of people that they have, the depth of resources they have, and the ambition that they have. And when you put all of that together, there's definitely those lessons to be learned that Western companies cannot just sit on their laurels. They will have competition maybe that they haven't had in the past. And they have to, in some instances, up their game to match what's going to be an offer from the Chinese companies.
Hmm. You just reminded me, in one of our most recent conversations on the podcast, we spoke to an executive in the pharmaceutical industry, and he had a very similar point to make around new players that play differently, that use sometimes a different business model, that are willing to learn more quickly and more openly. And I guess the one thing that struck him the most is these are the players that have the ambition to punt above their weight. Willing to do things more daringly than others. And very often those are the ones who then succeed, who then chart out a different course, and they're less predictable to the incumbent players than the kind of compatriots in the West, which they've known for years and can almost predict what their response is going to be. So very similar to what you've raised here. Leslie, as we get kind of to the end of this discussion, you're now based in Nigeria, another exciting emerging market, large population, lots of development, punted to be one of the economies that are the engines of growth on the African continent. Any lessons you will want to share with executives that are either perhaps already making their first steps into markets as emerging and vibrant as Nigeria, or are contemplating it? Anything that you want to leave with them that's not in textbooks, that you've learned through interactions, through the many kind of curious engagements that you've had with firms and the people who work in them?
Yeah, certainly. Nigeria is a fascinating place to be. The potential, as you've said, for that market is huge. What I think the issue that is faced today is that there's a lot of, like in many emerging markets, there's a huge amount of uncertainty. There's a huge amount of variability that happens on a daily basis. I joke with some of my colleagues that Nigeria, nothing will ever surprise me. But I say that in the way that don't disbelieve that the unthinkable cannot happen, because the unthinkable has already happened in my 18 months, probably a dozen times. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very adaptable. You have to scan the environment. You have to keep a good eye on media, social media, printed media, but also in terms of what's happening in terms of conversations with the staff and your contacts, your stakeholders, your customers, your suppliers, because it's such a dynamic market, and the volatility that exists, both good and bad, can really turn your business on its head literally in a day. Sometimes I say I check logic at the door when I go to work, because some of the things that I've experienced would seem to be from a very established economy basis in Europe to be completely illogical. But in Nigeria, because of that dynamism and because of the position the country is in terms of its development, are maybe not so illogical, but so we have to, I think, as we come in either to invest in a country like Nigeria or to work in a country like Nigeria, we have to be able to expect the unexpected. We have to be able to deal with the unthinkable, and we have to find good people to work with that will help us through that, because you cannot do it alone. And if you can build a good team that can help you react to that environment, I won't say it makes it easy, but maybe the challenges become more of an enjoyable challenge than a crisis. And I think that what I'm enjoying today is that variability, those challenges, finding solutions, and trying to navigate the very uncertain territory that we find ourselves in sometimes.
Mm. And the last question, I guess, from my side is when you interact with people who are young, who are just entering the workforce, you know, one of the most exciting experiences we've had over the past year is bringing interns into our business, and to see the kind of energy, curiosity, kind of looking at situation with a very fresh pair of eyes, and the kind of things that they're teaching us in that process, and doing it all within COVID times. In fact, one of our recent podcast episodes was with our interns. It was great fun, you know, having that conversation and so much learnings that's come out. I kind of wonder if the kind of things that the kind of lessons that you, as a kind of eternally curious person, brought into the workplace, what would you want to leave with people who are just entering the workforce, who are entering the workforce in a fairly scary period of time, where many of the things that we took for granted or with a fair amount of certainty do not seem to be in place? I remember, you know, my daughter came to me at one point and shared with me just one number that she has sent out close to 70 CVs out without a single response, and kind of made me go back and think about, I've never had that experience. Mm. I've never had to go so broad, so wide, at such volumes to just find that first opportunity. It startled me. So I'm very conscious the world that they are facing is very different to ours. Many of the assumptions that we've made, that sometimes me by mistake am trying to share with her, are based on those assumptions that actually don't work anymore. Yeah. So I kind of wonder, what are the kind of things that you still think are evergreen, that you still think are useful for the youth entering or facing the workforce, fairly scary place at these times, for the first time? What would you want to share with them?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic question, because at the end of the day, you know, the future of the world is in the hands of youth. And it is a difficult time. And I think companies are in the process of adapting. And I think with that, hopefully the mismatch that maybe sometimes exists between the needs and desires of young people today and young graduates today and the ability of a workplace to fulfill them will eventually close, because it absolutely has to. Clearly, how we are doing business today is not how it was when you and I first entered the marketplace. But in terms of things that I think remain valid, I think it's about not being afraid to try. You know, sometimes you learn the most by failing, by making mistakes. The key is to ensure that you learn from those failures, you learn from making those mistakes, so next time you are better. So sometimes people are afraid to try. And I always tell people, you know, my teams and particularly young people, that take the chance, try, because you until you test yourself, you never really know what it is you like. You never know what it is that you're good at. So I think that remains valid. I think also the curiosity or the desire to continue to learn remains valid, perhaps even more so than in the past, because the world is becoming more and more dynamic. Things are changing every single day. A year ago, no one would have imagined, you know, when you were first hearing the first stories about COVID, that 12 months later, we would be still in the same situation, having gone down a year of essentially the world stopping. And that has forced a huge amount of change. And I don't see that going back. I don't see it returning back to what it was before COVID. I think that momentum has started and that ball will continue to roll. So you need to continue to be curious. You need to continue to want to learn. and to be adaptable. And as I say, to try the situations that come along. If you're not successful once, to try something else or to try and find an alternative way of getting what you want to be. Those would be the things I would say remain valid.
Mm. Leslie, thank you for a wonderful conversation. I think lots of great insights, both for the young and for those of us working for years. It's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you for making the time. And I'm really looking forward to this episode going live and sharing it with broader audiences.
Thank you, Cyrus. My pleasure. I've liked the series so far, so I'm very, very delighted to participate.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.